Wouldn't you love to get paid for doing what you love to do? If you're ready to move on to what's next, join us for Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson. Our uplifting live talk show on Saturday mornings from 10 to noon will have you circling back, not running in circles, to pull your experience forward in new ways. Advance your career, plus help others with theirs. Join us Saturdays, 10 to noon, right here on 104.1 The Truth, for pragmatic advice and unconventional wisdom. Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson, where your path is created by walking on it.
Well, here we are again, and I actually probably should have queued up the music. Take me out to the ball game. Take me out. Right, Steve?
Oh, that would be lovely.
Lovely. Great. I've got a really special segment here with Steve Kaplan. We are actually Reverend Steve from Grace St. Paul's Episcopal Church, and you're going to hear the fun connection with baseball here shortly. He was born and raised in Baltimore and spent the majority of his life in Maryland with a short stint in the mountains of West Virginia. And all that changed, though, after a trip to the western U.S. where he fell in love with the landscape, especially the Red Rock deserts of southern Utah and northern Arizona. After a trip down the Colorado and his first night under the brilliant sky with thousands of stars, Steve determined then he needed to move west. 9 months in Southern California, then in St. George, Utah, living between the Grand Canyon and Zion National Park, Steve spent much time in the midst of the desert landscaping, ended up writing for local papers and a few national magazines. It was during those years, by the way, his day job, he was employed in administrative sales, was at the Episcopal Church in 1986, and after years of discernment, he entered divinity school in 1997 and ultimately was ordained in 2001 after completing the Master of Divinity. Steve has a passion for creative literature, social justice, outreach, and church growth and development, and he's been at Grace St. Paul's now for just over 4 years. And as my husband Ted and I will absolutely testify, he is quintessentially dedicated to our community and is a very gifted orator. Our favorite sermon, of course, so far has been tied to the story of his baseball mitt. And Steve, as well, is known for his over-the-top love for the sport of baseball, especially, no surprise, the Baltimore Orioles, his hometown team. In 1989, in fact, Steve published the book, The Comeback Kids, which is really an emotional reaction to the 1989 season of the Baltimore Orioles and the community that was around them. And as I say, a real story of loyalty as well as organizational change. So that's a tie-in.
Good heavens, Zara, I forgot half that stuff. Thank you very much.
So give our audience a quick recap on the baseball mitt.
On the baseball mitt?
Yes, your favorite mitt.
When I was 10 years old, I took a little trip to the Sears Roebuck department store in Baltimore and with my parents, and I coveted this glove, this outfielder's glove. It was actually a Mickey Mantle glove, which was not easy for me to handle since I was an Oriole fan, and we did have this little rivalry with the Yankees. But it was the perfect glove and something I wanted. I grew up very blue collar. We did not have much money when I was a child, and I spent the next 2 years saving money to buy this glove, which was $29.95, an incredible amount of money for me back in those days and for our family. But I was able to purchase that glove, and it stayed with me through adulthood. Was my companion everywhere and became to symbolize how I understood my relationship to baseball and community and everything. It was very important to me. I lost the glove as an adult playing softball, actually. And it was a difficult loss, but it was a thing, and it was just a symbol of what baseball really meant to me. And I remember stuffing the stuffing back in that glove on a regular occasion when it was up 25, 30 years old. And but it was my constant companion, and reminded me very much of probably my biggest hero in baseball, Brooks Robinson, who did the same thing with his gloves. We used to laugh at him when the stuffing popped out of his gloves, and it connected me a little bit more with the team, and that was great.
Well, who would have thought, because you've told this other story, that your grandmother sitting down and walking you through and teaching you all baseball statistics and names and so on would ignite such a passion that traveled with you? Because if I recall the data here now, you were born the year that the Orioles moved to Baltimore.
That's exactly right. I was born when the St. Louis Browns moved to Baltimore. And so I began my life that way. I was an Orioles fan pretty much coming out of the womb. And my mom and my grandmom both made sure that was the case. It was a very emotional reaction to the team and a very loving relationship with the team that I grew up with. My grandmom was central in that. Not only teaching me every aspect of the game, but little things that most people don't often notice. As I said in the book, my grandmom was teaching me the Charlie Lau theory of hitting before Charlie Lau ever thought about being a hitting coach. She noticed the intricacies that most people didn't. But what connected me through my grandma mostly was the way she approached baseball from a spiritual aspect. And it was, it very much moved her from the inside out. And it was very difficult for her to separate her love of baseball from her connection to God. And I learned a lot from that, and that's probably influenced me more than anything else.
And so that's fascinating, the connection to God. And so that's the orchestration, the dance, the skill?
Well, it is. It's the poetry of the game, and baseball's in my mind is much different from most sports in that way. It's much more poetic, and there's time to imagine what's happening around everything. But it's also the community aspect of baseball that makes such a big difference. I think that's the real connection. My grandmom was probably the person that I knew who was most connected to God, and she connected to God in everything that she did in her life, from the very simplest things to the most complex things. And baseball was just a part of that. It was a part of her being and who she was. But she understood God through the reactions of teammates coming together and what that looked like, and a city coming together
in the midst of that. Yeah. And certainly, you know, when I know here recently the Orioles came to play the Diamondbacks, and absolutely Steve was driving up to Phoenix for every single one of those games that week.
Yes, that was a very
difficult week
in many ways. We actually lost all three of those games on the last pitch of the game. But winning is not what baseball is all about to me, for certain. I still think probably my favorite baseball memory in all of these fantastic memories was the 1982 Orioles season, when they were actually three games out of first place with three games to go, two games out of first place with three games to go, which meant they would have to sweep the series against the Milwaukee Brewers to get into the playoffs. And in those days, it was just the American League champion versus the National League champion. So we went into that series. It was in Memorial Stadium. There was this atmosphere in the stadium that I still can palpably feel to this day. Another thing that really helps me understand the connection between religion and God, and how we connect to each other in community. And the Orioles won the first two games of that series, so we were tied going into the last game of the year. And in that last game, the Orioles lost, and they lost pretty badly. It was 10-2, as I recall. But what I remember the most is how the crowd continued to just link themselves to the team, even though we knew we were going to lose. And we stayed in that stadium for a good hour and a half after that game was over. just cheering the team, and it's one of my greatest memories of how people connect to one another.
That's
and,
beautiful.
And what sport is all about.
Well, lest anyone not realize that getting a copy of your book then, Steve, The Comeback Kids, it's A Fan Relives the Amazing Baltimore Orioles 1989 Season. You heard Steve's alliteration here of something that happened in 1982, and I tell you, reading your book, I could have been watching the play-by-play on a video based on that. And you
Thank
wrote
you.
The book, of course, in 1989. So this gift that you have of recall, is that something you mindfully know you're running the tape, that you can then write it so viscerally and put me right there in the stadium for each and every chapter?
Well, thank you for that. I consider myself a word person, and I actually think in words and not images, which doesn't fit with the way most people think. So I actually need to write things down to recall them at that level, but that's what drives me, and that's what makes it work. So that's how my recall works. It's through writing things down and putting them in an ordered fashion that I can recall later.
Interesting. And yet you're one that obviously is very much taken in by visual things.
Absolutely.
Such as I read that your experience of falling in love with the West and the Southwest.
Absolutely. Very much so. My personal reaction to the West was very sudden, and it happened immediately upon my first views of the West, and it was, I have a very romantic attachment to the West, and especially the geology and what's there, and I think that's very much also part of my connection to God, and very similar to the reasons I'm connected to baseball. I experience God through the wilderness, more so in the desert Southwest than any place I've ever been in my life, and I believe that God is part of creation, and that we can definitely experience God through that creation, and I had a very similar experience with baseball. It's very, very romantic, actually. So,
and again, for those of us that might not be baseball fans, though, I guarantee you read Steve's book, The Comeback Kids, and you'll want to go rethink, now, how did I miss this one?
Thank you.
Now, 1989, just real quickly, of course, that really was the 88-89 season was a major turnaround, and of course, that's what was my other modus operandi, other than just enjoying at any time a conversation with Steve. But also the whole principles of the importance of loyalty and of organizational change and of a coach that stepped in and did probably the unthinkable back then.
Thank you for bringing that up, because I do think that's what it's all about. First place or last place, I remain with the team, and that loyalty is central to the act here. As you mentioned, 1988 was the worst year in Baltimore Oriole history. They set the major league record, which still exists, for the most losses in a row to begin the season, 21. It was incredibly painful for some of us.
It was on the national agenda of jokes.
That's right.
Saturday Night Live or Johnny Carson,
that's
whatever.
That's right.
Ever
Carson
referenced.
Did it every night for a while, and that's what it was all about. But staying connected to a team through all of that, I think, is what makes all this works, and what loyalty is all about, and also what religion is all about in many ways. So it's very important to me. So all these, the last, before last year, the Orioles were a very poor team for 15 straight years, and I was with them the entire time, and sometimes I wondered if I was the only fan left.
As you wore your Orioles jacket to be derisive comments of your peers in the office, I recall you mentioned in the book.
That's exactly right. It happened all the time. You know, and it's very funny. 3 years ago, I would wear my Oriole gear wherever, and no one even knew what it was.
Yeah, yeah.
It was just amazing. And now I do, and people immediately want to start a conversation about the Orioles. I just found it amazing. I'm not a big fan of bandwagon jumpers, people who move to teams when they're doing very well and then go to someone else. I really do think this is all about loyalty and connection, and I think that's what this is all about.
Indeed. And that really is the base of defining who a fan is.
In my mind, it is. That does not seem to necessarily be the case in much of the world today, but that's what it's all about for me. So
you made a major career shift then from being in the business world and the printing business. A sales manager had you on the road, always on the move in that regard, to pursue the priesthood. Tell us about that shift.
Well, it's actually something that I considered as a teenager. In fact, when I was in the Roman Catholic Church, I was being groomed to be a priest when I was in high school. But I must say that I was struggling so much with some of the moral issues that were being struggled with in those days in the Roman Church, especially around birth control and the place of women in the church. Mm-hmm. And I was so troubled by some of those things, I just could not do it at that time. Later in life, I found the Episcopal Church. I realized soon after finding the church that I had always been Anglican Episcopalian in my thought process, which is all about, the Via Media, the Middle Road, balancing life and balancing theology, and I was again romantically attracted to the church and what the church was doing. So that helped me recall some of those old feelings about how I thought I might be able to most impact the world through the priesthood again, and then I had six different individuals come to me in the church that I was in St. George, Utah, and say, "Have you ever thought about this?" And after the parish priest there came and said the same thing to me, I started taking that seriously again, and I finally decided that is where I needed to be.
So this is another instance of those bamboo seeds were planted long time ago. It took a lot of water and other life experiences. It really caused them to shoot up.
Absolutely. A lot of people say to me, "Aren't you sorry that you didn't become a priest when you were a teenager and go right in when you were in your early 20s?" And I really don't feel that way. The life experiences that I have had have allowed me to be the priest that I think I am today. And I could have never done that without those experiences. And in fact, I don't know how anybody does this job without having a wide background of experience. Being a priest is probably the last generalist profession in the country. Mm-hmm. We're asked to be good at lots of different things, and that's not something you get to do in any other job. And I really like that part of the priesthood, but without having that background in so many different areas, there's no way I could pastorally care for people the way.
Yeah, particularly because the challenges you face are everything from indeed that spiritual connection for people, the health and wellness, the helping people and their families move when the person passes to the next life beyond. But then you've got the whole business side.
Exactly.
I mean, stepping in to run a major parish, as you have here with Great St. Paul, a beautiful building and organization, by the way, for those who haven't visited, it's right around the corner from the Arizona Inn and not far from the University of Arizona. A true sense of community, long time in the vicinity, but yet every parish struggles with change or wants to embrace change in new ways. So to the business background, to marshal significantly number of volunteers, right? I mean,
absolutely.
If you look at it, to move it forward, too.
Yeah, it really is. I don't know how anybody could run a church today without having that kind of business background. And I probably spend more time running the church than I would prefer. I would much rather be doing the pastoral things and preaching, but it is absolutely essential to everything that we do now and so important. And balancing a budget and all of those things come into practice. And the really good thing is having that business background has allowed me to do those things relatively quickly and efficiently, and allowed me to concentrate on what I'll call the important things.
That's right. For those of you streaming or anyone who's near their computer, you can learn more about Grace St. Paul's. The website is gsptucson.org. In fact, you've got an exciting series coming up this weekend, don't you, coming up on Friday and Saturday, Christianity 3.0.
We do. We're taking a pretty radical and exciting approach this weekend to something that we've never done before. And the whole idea is to try to suggest to the world that Christianity is maybe not what you've totally seen in the media.
Mm-hmm.
And our goal at Grace St. Paul's is always to recapture the ancient tradition of the church, especially the radically inclusive parts of that tradition.
In fact, you even call it progressive Christianity.
Yeah, we do. We do. And we also actually use the word promiscuous hospitality in what we try to do. So that's what it's all about for us. So it's trying to capture that ancient tradition, but say it in a way that makes sense in that progressive form that you talked about in present day Tucson.
That's right. And for our listeners who might enjoy being part of that series, it's going to be next Friday and Saturday night from 7 to 9:30 at Grace St. Paul. I'm certainly going to be there with Ted, and we're going to look forward to expanding our field of view, because everyone comes to the church with a different background, and it's a nice place to find a blend of such a unique group of people.
Thank you. Thank you. This is a very exciting program, and we're really looking forward to spreading this word. And we're especially pointing this for people who have been hurt by the church in the past, by a church, or just feel totally disconnected from it. Because we want to show people that there is another way into community and why we think that's so important.
Well, in fact, I would suggest that a lot of your peers, regardless of what the faith is right now, that this is a very difficult time for churches that have, you know, pervasively worldwide seen declining numbers and fewer people seemingly inspired by organized religion, although people, I think some indicators would say people are getting more spiritual, but it's in a different way. But I think the other component is finding that home and a place for community in a world that otherwise seems to think that friending people on Facebook or sending email is, quote, relationship.
Well, thank you for that. I appreciate you bringing that up. The phrase that we so often hear in the world today is spiritual but not religious.
Mm-hmm.
And because religious has really become a pejorative word for many people in the culture. But the piece that is missing and that very often is that community. And I believe that the only way that you can begin to change the world and create the world that we're trying to create is through community and doing it with other folks. We can't do this by ourselves. And Jesus said that over and over again in the Gospels. This is all about connecting with each other. And that's what this weekend's all about, too.
Yeah, great. Well, for anyone, again, who's interested, Grace St. Paul, the address again here in Tucson?
It's 2331 East Adams Street. So we're in the little V there between Speedway and Tucson, just 4 blocks from the medical center there, and right down the street, as you mentioned, from the Arizona Inn.
Yeah, and I think you'll find a very diverse community. We've got individuals from all walks of life, ages and stages that participate.
We are most proud of that. I'm probably more proud of that than anything's are. We are a very diverse community of people coming from many different cultures and backgrounds and religious traditions, and we all come together in a place where we can worship together and disagree with one another.
That's right.
And still be okay.
And also and enjoy just the variety of things. So again, the website, gsptucson.org, and as well, you certainly be welcome wearing your respective baseball jacket or carrying your mitt.
Absolutely.
That's right.
Please.
In fact, and Steve's book again, The Comeback Kids by Reverend Steve Keppelinger. Thanks so much for joining us here today.
Thank you so much for having Zara.
My pleasure.
Change is chaotic. That is, unless you embrace it, going places you hadn't dreamed were possible. The Larson Group, Architects of Change, is a leadership consulting, executive coaching, and career transition firm. We help individuals make the most of their current employment situation or to step forward confidently into a career transition. Contact us at thelarsongroup.com or toll free 1-877-544-2580. The Larson Group, Architects of Change, helping others unleash potential through transformational change. 1-877-544-2580.